Thank you so much for listening to the Midlife Rewired podcast. If this content is useful to you, please subscribe, rate, and share with your friends and loved ones. Welcome to the Midlife Rewired podcast, episode number 14. Gary LeBlanc, and he's back today to talk about how to live life at zero decibels. Welcome back, brother.
Thanks, buddy.
So we're in the Florida Keys right now on an annual mastermind slash celebration of life of sorts. So it's good to be down here. We've had some really good conversations so far on this trip, as we always do. And figured this would be a great time to dig into this topic. So just to frame up today's episode a little bit, Gary shared a manifesto with me a little while ago. And, Gary and I are very much aligned in terms of, our values and principles. And the path I've been on personally right now is completely in alignment with what we're going to discuss today. And it's interesting because Gary's approach is different to getting there. And so we're going to dig deep on that today. So Gary, maybe we could start off first by sort of defining what that title means. Decibels. How does that, what's this about?
Yeah, so we talked about this earlier, and the reason why I wanted to use that title was because zero decibels is almost a visceral word. You know, it's kind of like a concept all in one. And I don't want to get too much into the weeds here, because I tend to. But really, zero decibels is beautiful because it's a logarithmic scale, right? So what that means is zero doesn't mean zero. It means one. And it really means your reference. So when I talk about zero decibels, I'm talking about that landscape, that picture that describes me at my most peaceful.
Right.
So life, living life at zero decibels is living life striving for tranquility. So it's a very stoic, a very Buddhist perspective, but it reminds me to just slow things down and find that peace. So that's why we call it zero decibels.
Very cool, dude. Well, that's a full flowery explanation. So thank you for that.
Yeah, so much for that.
So you open up your manifesto by saying, why is there so much disease and anxiety going into the new decade? Where do we look for solutions? So that's what the topic basically today is. Mm. Zero decibels against that, essentially, right? Mm. So people get to that point in their life, our society, there's so much noise, and we're pondering the meaning of life. And anxiety has never been higher. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
I think we're dislocated. We're disconnected. And it's that almost alone state that we're creating by this disconnection that I think is fueling our anxiety. Because we've evolved to connect like this. And I'm really lucky because I bet I have, I would say 95% of my conversations aren't surface level conversations. We're getting into it, right? So for this, I find this very rewarding because it's lighting everything up. And I think what we're missing is this, right? And when you look at the generation coming after us, right, we're Generation X. When you look at Generation Z and the millennials, that disconnection, I think, is really fueling that anxiety because they aren't getting this. They aren't getting that constant validation that they're good, you know, that they're good enough. They have imposter syndrome. They always see people with stuff they think is better than theirs. Obviously, with social media, there's all this comparing. So when you put all that together, they're not getting the validation that they're good enough, and they're seeing that everybody else is better. So I think that's where it comes from a root, anyway.
Right. Yeah, comparison is the thief of joy, after all, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. You mentioned childhood, too, because we'll get into that a little bit more deeply, but how our childhood is so impactful in terms of who we are and part of that that noise. So talk to me a little bit about the manifesto in a whole. I mean, okay. So essentially we've got So for people who are listening right now, there's some really cool graphs that I've never seen before, which you know, I'll be able to present at some point. But we're going to be able to try to talk to those as much as we can. And it's essentially life's path. I'll let you take it, dude. But mm-hmm. but you know, it's from childhood through the struggle and to mm-hmm. midlife. So
yeah. So
walk us through it.
If you had to break it down, I think it's best to start in the middle. And what we used to call midlife crisis, you don't hear it as much anymore. But what midlife crisis used to mean, and it's funny that your podcast is called Midlife Rewire, right?
Yep.
What we used to call midlife crisis was what I believe the moment where we started to contemplate life for the first time and realized all that's gone behind us and potentially not feeling like we were actually living. So what the life graph is it's to help us recognize that there is going to be a point in your life when you start to contemplate bigger things. And what I try to do is frame it such that when you do get to that point and you look for it and you strive for it, you realize that when you get there, you start to truly unleash your power. And I think your power is the difference between your wisdom, so your growth, right? You grow through life, and the amount of noise in your life. So I think how wise you are minus how much noise you have in your life, that's your power. So the goal is to be intentional about gaining wisdom and becoming more self-aware and reducing the noise in your life. And our tagline is quiet the noise. And the reason why noise is such a beautiful place to start is because it's the easiest thing to do, eliminate sources of noise in your life, right? You know, we're not talking about learning how to speak 10 languages. We're talking about, you know, decluttering your room. We're talking about getting your life in order, and there's a lot of noise in there. So that's what the life graph strives to do. And obviously there's 6 intersecting lines and it gets right. a little complicated.
Yeah.
But when you see it, it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
To me anyway.
Yeah. So that's, you know, so that's really one of the main purposes of this podcast is essentially what to do and how to navigate once you get to that point in your life where you hit that sort of inflection, as you call it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but what happens if you leave yourself unattended and you don't take any kind of action and you don't have that self-awareness, and if you're not looking inward, you get stuck in the noise. So can you just like go a little deeper on the word noise
yeah.
for some people? Because that's, you know, maybe not clear for everybody.
Sure. You said there was a word you could have used right there. You could have said take inventory, right?
Yeah.
I think inventory is a great word. So if you take inventory of your life and you analyze your life from that perspective and start to break it down into all these priorities in life, so family, friends, right? Spirituality, finance, career, you have all these life priorities. And when you start to take inventory, and again, that takes intention. When you start to take inventory of all these life priorities, you realize that there's these things that are serving you, things that aren't serving you, and then things you want to do more of. And it's the things that aren't serving you. When you have that inventory done, that's where your noise is.
Okay.
And the noise is usually fueled by ego, and it's these egoic pursuits that are actually the source of much of that noise. Doing things for other people, you know, doing things because you think that's what other people want to see. And that's the source of much of our noise. And if you strip that away, then you're left with stuff that's serving you. And that's where you really supercharge your growth.
Right. And, you know, just the noise as well, that's an interesting thing. I mean, I'll think back to my childhood. When I was a kid, I spent a lot of time in nature. You know, my grandparents, one had a farm, the other one had a cottage on the water.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time just sitting on the dock with a fishing rod, catching nothing for an hour, hours
yeah.
at a time, just being happy
silence.
In the sunshine, in the fields, or in the barn, smelling the hay, and that's silence, like
yeah.
that's silence, but the world has changed. So on top of what you said, for people these days, there's fucking phones, and there's
yeah.
nonstop noise. Like,
yeah.
I don't know the number, but the amount of noise that's in our life every single day,
yeah.
I mean, so the it's changed. So modern society, I don't think it's ever been a noisier time. So
maybe that's the metaphor, actually. Maybe that's the easiest way to understand it, is literally noise. Like, it's literally noise, all these things. You know, the beeps and the buzzers and this and that. Like, it's a great metaphor for everything in your life that's not serving you, right? And the funny thing about our phones is, even when they're not going off, we have anxiety about them going off. And there's research behind that now. Just having your phone there. I went to a party last week at UK's, and I forgot my phone home. And I'm telling you, when I accepted the fact that I wasn't going to go get it, wow. Man, it was a different time. Yeah, it was awesome. And it was so distracting when you have your phone, right? And when you lose that distraction, you're actually present, you know? You find time moves slower, and that's a really good thing. You know, I'm really on a quest to slow things down.
Right.
You know, the slow movement. I dig it.
Yeah. So that's kind of an interesting segue to maybe to meditation and mindfulness. I mean, we talked about ways of eliminating noise.
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked a little bit in the last podcast about meditation. Has that changed much for you since then? I mean, I know that's, for anybody listening as well, Sam Harris is an amazing resource for mindfulness. He's probably one of the best of the best.
I think, agree. Maybe
listen to anything he has to say. But Gary turned me on to his app, which I honestly haven't used much of. I'm at a point now where I really kind of just like prefer silence. But any tools that you're using right now around mindfulness meditation?
I do that. I guess what's more important is kind of how I structure it. So the morning is all about the breathing in, you know, people's pain and struggle, and breathing out love and positivity. So it's a great way to frame my day, right? Reminding yourself every day over and over again through your breath that people are in pain and struggling. A lot of people are. And if you take that in, it's an act of compassion, in my opinion. So it reminds me to live with compassion, and then to always lead with love and positivity, right? So how I, and Brendon Burchard, it's probably resonating a bit in that kind of language. What energy are you bringing to something? Right. I know when he walks through a door, he calibrates his energy, right? So it's actually kind of cool if you can create these cues and just enough frequency that it doesn't dilute its focus, but you do it enough so that it reprograms the mind.
Right.
So it's more that. So the meditation helps me frame up how I approach my day and the energy I bring into it. And then at night, it's I do a meditation. So loving kindness.
Right.
And that's a great way to go to sleep, you know.
So you spoke to a group recently, and was it mindfulness was the topic, right? At corporate
No, topic? actually this was interesting. I just did a keynote for an agile transformation conference.
Okay.
And they wanted me to speak on change management and agile transformation. And actually, I spent the whole time going over the life graph.
Yeah, that's why I bring it up, because I know you talked about that. So, let's get back to this again. I want to talk to you a little bit about mindsets as well, which is hugely important. But you use a term here that I've never really heard. So, you know, we're back to the noise. We're stuck. We're at that point, and you talk about nudges.
Yeah.
Which is, I've never really heard that term. What's a nudge?
So a nudge is the smallest measurable action you could take to bring you closer to what you think you want to achieve, right? And I say what you think, and I'm very careful with my words. It's not about being better, right? And you think this way too. That implies that we're not good enough, right? Like, we are exactly what we are, right? You can't be apologetic for it. But if you don't realize where you are and want to evolve, I think that's the tragedy, right? So I'm aware, I want to evolve. I have a couple of North Stars, right? We don't get too complicated with long-term goals because things change so much, but I have my North Stars, right? So last year, it was non-judgment and impeccable word, two very hard things. And actually, they're at the source of, you know, a lot of ancient wisdom. I'm not writing the book on this. But using those as my North Stars, then when you distill it, it gets down to nudges. what's the smallest measurable thing I could do now to get me closer to that person, to get me closer to someone who is more honest with himself, with others, and who truly doesn't judge, you know, who's truly open in a conversation, creating space for people to occupy. And that's really what contemplation is. It's creating that space for people to occupy. So my nudges are little things I could do to get me there. So the morning routine could be a little bit of a nudge. And it's very accessible. You know, people can take a small action.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fucking hugely important, too, for people to really take time to reflect on what is it their intention is and what is their purpose to begin with before we even start nudging.
Because
A lot of people don't, you know, you have a quote in here about a man without a goal is a ship without a rudder, right? So nudge is a great word. I think that's something that people can, you know, but you have to sort of approach it that way in small increments sometimes, right?
Because
something catastrophic can happen and then you change immediately. You hear about it all the time. Somebody has a horrible health scare.
Yeah.
And the next day they're fucking doing something completely different, or they lose somebody, or, you know, it just, but that doesn't happen all the time. So it's a process and it's a rewiring process. It takes time, repetition. And so how can you frame up nudging then? Is there some kind of framework? Because it's easy for people to say, okay, I'm going to like do this. And then fucking 2 days later, it's gone, right?
So, no. I have be careful what you wish for. I have a crazy framework for it.
You have crazy eyes right now.
I call it, and it's funny you said, that quote, because the photo next to that quote, what is it? It's an arc. And when you talked about, you know, things can happen in life where you're blindsided, you know, it's the flood, right? We're constantly building that arc. So think of a nudge as every plank of that arc is a nudge. So what I do is, first, if you're going to come up with these nudges, they have to be based on a foundation, right? So I'm gonna try to stay here, okay? I'm moving my hands for people who can't see it. I'm going to stay...
keeping a safe distance.
I'm going to stay at sea level. But what I do is, we talked about earlier, so really quickly, I try to better understand who I am, and that's the inventory. So I call it the environmental inventory. So I have a process of taking what serves me, what doesn't serve me, and funneling it down into this inventory, and then I can see myself, and that's my foundation. The environmental inventory is really the fulcrum of everything I do, because it's the only objective and honest answer I have to who I am. Because I know whatever I think I am is a very, very heavily biased caricature of what I really am. So my environment, though, that's something I can touch, you know, and that doesn't lie. You know, the people I talk to, the conversations I have, all these things, these are prescribing what my life really is. So now, once I have that built out, then I can say, okay, where do I want to start? And I rank them, and it's not sexy. It's a lot of numbers and ranking, and, you know, Don thinks this way too with his life plan. And so this was, you know, kind of built from that initial framework and expanded. So I know the foundation for each and every nudge is like that distillation, that drop of nectar from that funnel of information that's from the inventory. So I stayed fairly at sea level because I could go off.
Yes. Well, and you know, so that's a great description. So, and then having awareness too of
self knowledge.
Yes, but actually being
aware
of what you're doing, present in the moment. You know, you talk about every word you say, everything you do. And at the end of the day, you know, we're talking about your character and your identity. That's just something we fucking make up. Anyway.
Yeah.
What is Brian anyway? Brian is just a guy who has been shaped through this past experience. And I'm not that. I'm really not that. My true self, right?
I'm slightly bigger than average biceps.
Slightly. Thanks for that, dude. You talked about faith in here too, dude. So that's faith. Interesting because I didn't grow up. You know, when you think faith, oftentimes it's
think
about theology, right? And I didn't grow up in a religious background. So how does faith play into all this for you?
How doesn't faith play in all of this? Actually, faith, do you know who got me on faith?
George Michael?
No. No, surprisingly not. Pema Chodron. Pema Chodron is a Buddhist monk. Her residency, if you call it that, where she resides, is 20 minutes from where I was born, okay, in Pleasant Bay, Cape Breton. And Pema Chodron, I believe she's 80 now, she's a Buddhist monk, and she's a beautiful woman. Very, very beautiful woman. When you read her books, one is called When Things Fall Apart, you see what kind of soul she has, and just beautiful wisdom there. So faith, the conversation with faith came from Pema. And it was, she opened my eyes to the fact that hope and faith are like matter and antimatter. They can't exist in the same place. So there's a trade-off. There's a trade-off to hoping. The trade-off to hoping is losing faith in life.
Mm.
Because you can't hope for something in the future if you have faith.
Right.
If you have faith, you just have faith.
Good.
And you can't have true faith until you know yourself, until you know you're living intentionally. Because the amount of your life lived with intention, I believe, is the guarantee or the more certainty you have in faith playing out. So if I live my life completely random, how can I have faith in anything that happens? If I live my life randomly, things are going to happen randomly. But if I live a life with intention, I can trust and have faith. Right. That what comes should come. I believe everything happens as it should. Not everything happens for a reason. That sounds divine. But everything happens as it should. I believe in that wholeheartedly because I live with intention. And it's beautiful when you can truly have faith, because when shit happens and when that flood happens, right, then you're like, you know, there's a nugget here and I'm going to have to breathe through this. Mm-hmm. And getting through those nukes gets easier, but there's always a bigger nuke down the road.
Right.
Right? You're always building the ark. So that's what faith means to me.
Yeah, well, that's a serious answer, dude. I wasn't expecting anything less, but, you know, that they say, well, I believe life happens for us, not to us.
Mm.
And you talk about faith of having your intentions in the right place,
yeah,
so you're faithful that whatever happens, happens, and if it doesn't happen, do you believe in something higher, though, that there's a universal order, or, you know, I know you're not religious, but do you believe there's a factor there as well, that there's some kind of reason or meaning?
Yeah.
That, you know, that's a big fucking question, but I mean, just...
So, a couple of points to this answer. I believe that if I'm binary about this answer, that I'm not being honest. And I'm an engineer. It's not black or white, right?
Yep.
So one, we don't know. So it's
not, we don't.
It's ridiculous for me to be
it's your
so
belief.
Prescriptive, right? But I'll tell you one thing. I do believe it's too convenient when you read the Bible and you really dig into religion. It's too convenient that it lends itself so easily to these beautiful metaphors. Right? When you think of universal energy and you really get into the neuroscience of it, and the Buddhists, they call it impressions. And actually, it's not the Buddhists. I often get them mixed up. Epictetus, so a Roman Stoic, right? So one of the ancients, you know, back in, I think it was 55 AD or something is when Epictetus was around. But Marcus Aurelius, right? He refers to Epictetus a lot, but he calls them impressions. So we go through life and we're always impressed on. So me being with you, you're having an impression on me. Things I'm not even noticing, I'm not even perceiving, are leaving impressions.
Right.
We're constantly in this soup of impressions.
Right.
And we were talking about earlier, most of it, almost all of it, we don't even perceive. Right? They're these impressions that rewire our subconscious almost haphazardly. So when you look, exactly. So when you look at this universal energy, well, doesn't it make a lot of sense, right? And I think the universal energy is really, when we talk about God, I think it's the anthropomorphization of this energy, right? It's this universal field that's always prescribing who we are because we're part of it,
right? And we become an impression for other people. We're all that. Yeah. And Sam Harris talks about this in his app as well, that who are we really? You know, I think it was Douglas Harding. He has this thing called the no head explanation, where you can see everything, but you can't see your own head, right? And the point is, what are we really? Where's the locus of our consciousness?
Right, right.
And there is no locus.
Right.
Right. And
people usually, like in a meditation, will do that and bring it back. It usually comes right back to sort of the third eye. Where
exactly.
You think, feel
exactly.
It, and then you hit the wall.
Exactly. So when you accept that there's potentially no locus of your consciousness, well, then really when you think about it, this is pretty cool. Now you're just a player. You're an actor in this sea of impressions. And you're just it's kind of like your one voice in this senate of impressions on this earth. That's one consciousness. That's what I truly believe. And I know that's a bit in the clouds, but I'm telling you, for universal energy, that makes a lot of sense to me.
It's not the clouds for me either, brother. Because Gary has a 6'4" wingspan. If you could just see the way he's fucking flailing his arms right now, it's whatever he's saying. I'm agreeing with you anyway at this point. So
yeah, a lot of hand work.
Well, that's a great answer, brother. Why don't you just walk us through the life graph, just the graph itself, in a sequence,
yeah, it's
so
easy.
We can sort of think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, it's easy. And actually, it's kind of fun. So you're born and you're a little baby, right? So everybody's following so far. And you're rolling around, you know, you're just this baby. You're shitting and eating and you don't know what the hell is going on. And, you know, you bump your head and you realize, oh, shit, that hurt, you know? And it's all these very autonomic things, you know, you're just going through the motions. You're not really doing anything with intention, but you're still growing. But you're growing through experience. There's no awareness, right? So, you know, you go along and you're struggling. So it's called struggle. So the experience, let's call that struggle. But that experience is fueling growth. So as you're fighting this struggle and constantly trying to make life easy, you're still growing. Right? And then at around 6, 7, 8 years old, around there, you start to get a bit of an ego, right? Because this girl at school wants to kiss that guy, but she didn't ask me to kiss. And then you see what he's wearing, and he has nicer clothes than you. And she said you had big ears, and this guy's teased you for stuttering. Now all of a sudden, the noise kicks in, and this is the beauty. So now, and that ramps up, and from like 6, 7, 8 years old to your teens, you start building up all this noise, and all you see is the noise, right? You don't see things for what they are because you're so consumed with ego now. You're consumed about feeling good enough. We talked about this earlier, feeling validated, you know, wanting to be the best at this and that. So all this noise is there, and that's all you see, and your life is essentially a soup of noise. Now you go through life, and now we get near the point of inflection. And it used to happen in our 40s, because you know what? People had shit to deal with. I didn't give a fuck about self-actualization in 1950 when I had 4 kids and I was trying to raise them.
Exactly.
I only fucking breathed air for the first time when I was 50, right? So I'm not worried about all that stuff. But now at 50, I look at my life and I can finally breathe, and I'm like, holy fuck. I'm 50.
Right.
What the hell just happened? I just blinked. And you see things for the first time. You lift your head above the noise for the first time. And you see that all that struggle, all those experiences were serving you and you were growing. And finally, you've grown enough to poke your head above the noise. And now you see clearly. And that's the point of inflection. So call that midlife crisis. Now it's moving to the left, right? Now it's happening at younger and younger ages because we have a lot less to deal with. Like it or not, people, life is way fucking easier now than it was during the war. You know, I don't give a shit about, oh, it's not easy and this and that. No, I'm sorry. World War II, those were horrible times. Yeah. People were dealing with shit.
Right.
And your environment creates who you are. So yes, they went through hell and it created a very resilient generation, a hard generation that had to deal with shit. Now we don't have to worry about as much. So we're having these existential conversations in our 20s and 30s. So this midlife crisis, now we're poking our head above the water when we're 29, when we're 28, when we're 30. That's a gift. And when we see that and we poke our head above it for the first time and we see the noise, okay, the light goes off. Mm-hmm. And you can say, you know what? That's not fucking serving me. And I don't need the validation anymore. I'm good enough, right? I'm good. Yeah. I know that I'm a function of what's created me and I'm good with that. And it's not, you know, it's not an excuse for being a dick. It's not like I am what I am so you can all go fuck yourselves. No, that's not the point. The point is I am what I am. I'm not going to apologize for it, but you know what? I know what I am now and it's still blurry, but I have a better idea than I did yesterday. And now I can say, okay, I'm going to deal with that noise. So then you start to work at the noise and that line that was above everything, now you start to chip away. You chip away, you chip away. And the noise is going down now. And now you go back and you say, wow, I grew all that time. But I was growing almost handicapped because one big part of growth wasn't even activated. And it was awareness and knowledge. Because growth, I believe, is awareness times experience. And when you're young and blind and don't see the noise, it's only experience. There's no awareness. You're not aware of anything. You're not learning anything intentionally. You're not doing anything intentionally. Yeah, I know there's dribs and drabs here, but I mean really intentionally. Then after the midlife crisis, well, now you have awareness times experience. Now you can start to create that experience instead of it happening to you. See, you mentioned life happens for us. Well, it fucking sure does as soon as you start going into that mode of thinking. When you start to be aware and weaponize your experience. That's what growth is. So now while you're, you know, doing those nudges, now what you're doing is that struggle, now it's been converted. Now instead of fighting the struggle, now it's intention. Now that line, I turn it blue on the graph. Now instead of you constantly fighting the struggle, now it becomes intention. And all these nudges weaponize your growth. And it's easier to see on a graph, but now all these nudges are either fueling my growth with awareness and intentional experience or getting rid of the noise. And the further that line goes up and the quicker my noise line goes down, well, that's my reservoir. That's my reservoir of resilience and my capacity to deal with shit that comes at me. And eventually you're going to get, you know, at a certain level of growth where you've really cracked the seal in a good way and you start to become wise. God forbid you become wise. And it's that moment where you can really start to see what happens to you through a different lens and realize that it's serving you. And it's a motherfucker. It's a motherfucker sometimes. The arc is hard, but you see it. And when you see it, you can walk into it and deal with it. Yeah. But until then, you can't. Right. So that's the life graph.
Wow. Yeah, beautifully done, brother.
It's easier when you see the graph.
Well, I saw it the way you described it. It was really well done, man. You know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, you get to that point when you have that clear intention and you have that awareness. But fucking resilience is the key thing that we all lack and we need to continue to work on.
Yeah.
And that requires daily grind.
Yeah.
Daily grind. You just have to embrace it. You know, that you talk about struggle. Like, there's always struggle.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you know, Buddhism, they talk about embracing the struggle.
Yeah.
You know, embrace it, like enjoy it, man, because fuck, it's good. It makes you feel alive. Mm-hmm. The second you stop and fucking sit there, you know, you talk about World War II, you know, they didn't have fucking time to stop and do anything. God, but now everyone stops, but they're actually much more miserable.
Yeah.
Like the amount of anxiety and depression and things in our culture now, it's fucking unbelievable. So, you know, people, if they can really understand what you've just described here, this is huge. And it's fucking just hitting that point where you're aware and you realize, you know, and then, and then applying tools in nudges.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. Like, again, I was reading this book. What a book, man. Constellations by David White, and Sam Harris got me on this, but what a book, man. He was talking about self-knowledge. So there's one essay on self-knowledge. And sometimes my, don't call it arrogance, sometimes I think I have the solution, you never have the solution. So I forget that I'm always on the path to learning more, and I never have the solution. And when I read his essay on self-knowledge, it reminded me that it really is never going to end. Like, I'm never going to be able to see who I am clearly, ever, ever. Now, it's a game of numbers. I see my life a lot more clearly than I did. But awareness, it's truly, and I know this is so cliche, but it's truly about the dance, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's being aware that you're in a dance. So don't get caught up on, I'm this and I'm that. Just kind of get caught up in recognizing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not judging it. You know, it's, you got me on this, Brian. Yeah. Rain, you know, recognize, accept, investigate, and non-judgment, right? And I think that comes from Sharon Salzberg, I think. Anyway, one of the very insightful people that I hear. And it really is about that. Awareness is about recognizing.
Right.
And the minute we start to recognize is the minute we're on this journey, and it's never going to end.
And be kind along the way, too, right?
Yeah.
That's you.
Well, and kind to yourself, right? Self-compassion. That's the point.
Another day in and of itself, because that being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
If you're not kind to yourself, you're not going to be kind to anyone else.
You can't reflect what you don't have, right? So self-compassion truly is that place, and it's what allows you to start having a conversation with who you are.
Right.
Because when you accept that you're exactly what you need to be, then you stop filtering the fucking conversation with yourself. You're finally honest with yourself.
Yes.
And it can't happen until you truly believe that.
Right.
Truly believe it. Saying it is one thing,
right,
but truly believing it.
Right.
Look, there's a lot of shit that I want to fucking fix.
Of course.
You know, and fix is even the wrong word. But there's a lot of stuff that I'm working on.
Right.
You know, but you know what? I'm noticing. And as soon as I notice, I know I've won. Because eventually that noticing is going to seep deep into my programming and my fucking limbic brain is going to automatically be rewired forever, and it's going to become easier and easier. So it's really about hitting that step.
Yeah. Well, that's some powerful stuff, brother. Thanks for sharing that, dude. Now, I think we could go on here probably for another hour, but we've got a road trip today to Key West. So we got to prepare for that, but
I won't be drinking straight tequila.
So, you know, I talked about tools earlier about, you know, awareness and noise. Can we talk about
Zero
dB a little bit here at the end?
Super pumped, man.
Yeah.
Super pumped. You know what? I was thinking about this, and I hate promoting. On our social channels, we're never going to brag about ourselves, ever. And that's a doctrine. Like, that's, we're never going to talk about ourselves in our social. It's all going to be providing value and education. But I'll tell you, I love talking about this because I really love what we're doing, man. Zero dB is our new drink, right? And again, this is less of a plug and more of an aspiration. Zero decibels, we call this how to live in zero decibels. Zero dB is exactly, you came back to the word nudges. Zero dB is about that. Zero dB is a drink formulated with my beautiful partners, you know, Armin, Sam, Fab, these guys are gold. We formulated this drink based on empirical research, studying how anxiety lives in the body. So basically studying where it lives neurologically. What targets in the body can you interact with to actually modulate anxiety? So we've done that work. And I say we because, you know, Armin and the gang, we're family now. And we took that research and we took, you know, my background in beverages, and we created these two beautiful beverages based on that science. And the super extract we have, it's all cannabis free, and the super extract is from these plants specifically chosen to help modulate that aspect of anxiety better than CBD. And it's 25 to 30 times better in the research that we've done, that Armin's done in their platforms. How they've measured it. So what we've done is we've taken that and we've fueled our drinks with this. And they're all organic, low calorie. And what they do is they help you just take a breath and you feel it. The way it works in my body, and again, I'll speak to my body because I don't want to speak in generalities, but the people who've had it, that's exactly what it does. It gives you a moment to breathe. It's like the eye of the hurricane, that stillness that people sometimes don't even know what it feels like because they've never had it. So you get the stillness and it allows you a chance to breathe. 2.5 hours to breathe. It creates space for inspiration, clarity. And when you talk about nudges, you know what? Game on. Once you get that piece, once you achieve 0 decibels, then you can sit back and say, okay, what's going on right now? You know, where's the next nudge? Without all that noise, and that's what it does. It eliminates the noise. Our tagline's quiet the noise, right? And that's what we do, you know? Noise-canceling earphones, they cancel out the external noise. Well, we aim to cancel out the internal noise, and that's what we're going to do. And we launch in March, so awesome. I'm pretty jazzed about it.
Well,
super jazzed.
Yeah, super proud of that, Drake. Super proud of you, too, buddy. I love you, buddy. Thanks for doing this, man. And, exciting year ahead, man.
Buddy. Yeah, good thing. Thanks, guys.